definitely a fascinating subject to kind of unpack the creative ins and outs, and not even creative ins and outs, the you know, financial, logistical, business, you know, life cycle, lifestyles of trying to quote unquote make it in a creative industry. So happy.
Yeah, that's a heck of a phrase for sure. Making it.
Yeah. Making it. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Cause you learn that, making it is a ever rotating, revolving, goalpost.
Yeah.
Just,
yeah, I'm really learning that for sure.
Yeah. Continues to move down the field. So, or vertical on the field or sideways or diagonal. You never know where the goalpost is on any given day. So,
yeah. Or if there's even a field.
Right. Exactly. We could, or if there's gravity, who knows if there's gravity or not.
Exactly. Well, good, good. So yeah. I'm just going to jump in here and, Bradley, thank you so much for being on the podcast with me. Tell me, how did you get started in this weird, world of show business?
Man, great question. I've just always been into movie. Like ever since I was a kid, I was, you know, I have nobody in my family that is in this industry. I come from Houston, Texas, which is not exactly known for its vibrant film scene. I was just one of those kids that was always like trying to see the new movie every weekend, was, you know, trying to get on all the film websites like Ain't It Cool News and Box Office Guru and all these like weird niche film nerd websites. And I thought I wanted to be like a film critic when I was a kid, just cause like that was my only point of reference. Like there wasn't anybody that I knew, making movies, but you know, every Friday in the Houston Chronicle, there would be, you know, all the movie reviews. And I was like, well, I guess that's, if you love movies, I guess you write movie reviews, right? And so I kind of started doing that a little bit. I tried it and I just didn't like it. And then I like helped a good friend of mine, make a movie kind of back when I was in, late high school, and, just helping that friend make his movie was a kind of an eye-opening experience for me. And then I started making my own movies and it, was the most addicting thing I've ever done. I remember one time I was editing, you know, it was in the very, I was at the very right time of like the cameras that were just good enough to look cool, but what didn't cost $25,000. And I had a mutual friend whose dad had a camera, and then I was able to like buy a really cheap editing software. And I was able, you know, one time we shot all day and then I stayed up all night editing and I woke, you know, I didn't go to bed until 8 in the morning. And I was like, all right, this is it. This is what I want to do with the rest of my life. So I've been kind of going at it, you know, nonstop ever since. I'm also really not good at anything else. That kind of helps me.
Well, you know, you have been doing it for a very long time. Sometimes I think the same thing about my skill set. I'm like, well, I just know how to do this, so I guess that's it. But lots of different things feed into the lessons you've learned feed into lots of other skills. So don't worry, you'll be able to do all the other things too, like the regular life stuff, like, you know, be a dad and like properly create a budget for a household in the future and decide which minivan the right one. You'll be able to figure it out all from your film knowledge.
Hopefully. Yes, hopefully.
Tell me about this first film that you and your friends were making. Was it like, oh my God, I always wanted to make this film? Or was it like after you made that first one with your friend, you were like, if he can do it, I can do it. And you just put something together.
Yeah. I mean, the very first thing I ever did was a documentary about getting my wisdom teeth taken out. I just knew that I was going to be really high off of all these meds. And so I'm like, oh, I bet it'll be really funny. And I made my dad hold the camera as this dentist who I'm sure this surgeon was like, I'm sure giving me a weird look or whatever, but like, and I made this like 3-minute little documentary about just like how wasted I got off the painkiller meds. I just showed it to my friends because I thought it'd be funny, and my friends thought it was really funny because they were all in it, because they all came over after I had the surgery done and were like making fun of me as I like held a camera up to them. And I think just, you know, that initial buzz, because that's when, you know, when you're young and you kind of figure out a lane that you like to be in, you don't do it ever thinking about money. You do it because, you know, you think your friends will think it's funny. At least that's what I did. And then,
oh yeah, 100%.
You know, you make, yeah. And so, I mean, like from that point on, I made like, you know, I was making like 3 or 4 short films a year. Half the time I was just me acting in them or 2 of my buddies acting in them. And you know, we weren't exactly popular with a lady. So like we had like 1 girl who would like act in our stuff, and she was terrible, just like we were. And so it was like, you know, and it's like my buddy Jordan playing like a 40-year-old man in 1 scene. And then he's playing, you know, I don't know. It was just like really the worst production value you've ever seen. And, but it was, you know, infectious. And then by the time you get to, you know, short film number 25 or 30, you should be starting to make them, you know, make them be reasonably good.
When you were a kid and you were making these, what was it like film? Was it like, were you doing it on VHS tapes? What was the format that you're using? Or I'm sure there's a better word for that. Medium? No.
Medium. No, yeah. Format's probably the right term. No, okay, I was lucky in that. I mean, I didn't really start until my junior, senior year of high school. And it was right at that time when the prosumer cameras were coming out. And so you could get a camera that was not $25,000 that looked really good. You could get one for like $1,100. And one of my good friends' dad's had one, and he just let us borrow it a couple of times. And so, and it was easy to edit, but you know, it was at the beginning of like Final Cut Pro and all that stuff. And so, I was kind of hit it at the right time. Although I do read a lot about the, you know, people like Spielberg and even more modern day examples like the Duplass brothers, when they were, you know, the VCR was connected to the camera and you had to like rewind 1 VCR to edit something. I don't know, that kind of, you know, I'm slightly nostalgic for a time that I never experienced any of that. But
oh yeah, but that sounds like a bunch of bullshit that they use. They're like, oh God, we were so cool cutting this thing. It's like,
right.
Yeah, but if you want to, you can surely be talking about Final Cut Pro someday and people will be like, what's right. that, man? Because they're making like full movies on iPhones and shit. So don't worry.
No, totally.
You have it was hard totally. Too.
Yeah.
You had to know a program, yeah. Like what to do.
Right. Yeah. So I was pretty much all self-taught in that respect. Just kind of
pretty awesome.
You just kind of figure it out on your own. I mean, that's it's a blessed age where you just kind of, if you're interested in something, you just kind of figure it out. So
yeah,
it's kind of fun.
So after movie 25, are you still in high school at this point, or have you decided, or are you at college and by movie 25?
By probably by short film 25, I was in college, and I think we have a mutual friend that acted in my first 2 short films that were actually good, and that would be Jordan Maxwell. You know Jordan Maxwell?
I think so. Yeah, sounds familiar.
Yeah, he's an improv guy in Austin. He was the first 2 films that I made that were actually any good, and good is a loose term, but Jordan was a and still is a great improv actor. And it was kind of the first time where I was like I was casting actors instead of just like my buddy down the hall or the dorm room that I was in. You know, that's definitely a big step, is when you start casting, when you start working with people who, you know, who you don't know, who are actually really good at what they do. That's a key step for people, I feel like.
Yeah, totally. How did you connect with Jordan as an actor? Or were you guys friends and then similar to the roommate thing, but instead it turned out your friend was an actor? Or did you like cast him in a regular like casting sort of situation?
Like, yeah, I just cast him. I was a junior film student at UT, and we had to make a 10 to 20 minute short film at the end of semester. And I wrote this really silly script about a sadistic gym teacher in the 70s who was like, you know, really mean to all his kids. And then these two, and they're like 10 and 11 year olds. These like two 10 and 11 year old kids decide to like, you know, overthrow him. And so I knew I needed to cast 10 and 11 year olds to play the kids. And then I knew I needed like a really funny, you know, kind of physically slightly more intimidating looking actor that had some, that I, and I wanted him to be really funny and really, you know, over the top. And so, I just put out a big casting call and Jordan came in and absolutely crushed the audition. And it was definitely, I didn't know him at all, but within like, you know, that's the thing about casting. Usually you have to wade through a lot of garbage to see the diamonds. And, you know, I think I'd seen probably 15 other actors at that point. And then I was like, well, are there any good actors in Austin? And then Jordan walked in within 5 seconds. I was like, this is the guy, no doubt about it. So that was,
he also, skews older as well. Like he looks older than he is. So I'm sure that helps in the way of him being an older gym teacher, even though he was probably in college at the time.
Yeah. I think he was like 23 at the time.
Oh, right.
And I think I was like 19 or something along those lines. We were very young.
Yeah. How'd you get the kids? How did you like get the, both the kid actors and like, did you do all the proper permits and all the stuff?
Definitely did not do all the proper permits, but I did, I just, you know, it's, you know, there's a lot of, in Austin there used to be, and I don't know if it's still there, but there was something called, and I think it's just called austinactors.com or something like that. And I thought it was going to be tough to find, because not only did we have to find two kids that were good actors for the two leads, but we also had to find like 15 other kids who wanted to be in the movie as background, you know, the other kids in the gym class. And that was easy. Like we just put out a casting notice and within, you know, on one day we had, you know, 40 parents bringing their kids up for auditions. So,
And was this a UT movie?
Yes, it was a UT student short film.
Awesome. Wow. A lot of resources into that. That's a pretty quality situation. Like if you had the resources to like get, you know, have a casting situation, have actors and like, mm-hmm. you know, have anything to offer these parents that they want to do, like that's so awesome. That's pretty great.
Yeah, no, I mean, UT definitely, like, and we were able to shoot on UT, like UT let us use one of their gyms for like, because the whole movie took place in the gym, more or less.
So you were telling me about the experience of getting all the kids. There were so many of them, so many more than you expected.
Yeah, and that's when I kind of realized that, like, when it comes to acting, there's usually plenty, like, I always encourage people who are just starting out making, you know, making movies, making short films, like, don't just, unless your buddy happens to be, like, Danny McBride, like don't just cast your buddies. Like there are plenty of good actors out there that are, you know, that are willing to come in an audition. And you know, they're not all going to be great, but every now and then you might find a Jordan T. Maxwell who's awesome. And you end up using him in a bunch of movies.
Yeah. And Jordan's professional and everything too. So it was must've been a good sort of first experience in a like, you know, getting the school to do it and then showing them a quality, results. Yeah. They're like happy that they put the effort and gave you the resources because they're like, oh yeah, well, look at this. This guy's quality. Yeah. Jordan's very professional. Yeah. Every time I've, you know, worked with him or talked to him, it's like, oh, this guy knows what's going on. Okay, cool.
Yeah. He knows what he's doing. Yeah. For sure.
Interesting. So since you mm-hmm. had that first casting experience, what has been your experience since then? You mentioned, you know, sometimes you see a bunch of people and they're just not what you're looking for. Is it for you mm-hmm. when you're looking to cast a movie, are you involved in that anymore, or do you generally have other people doing it for you? And second question, are you generally casting from the gut, or is it like you have a feeling, like you know certain people, you know, you look at their resume and you're like, oh, they've mm-hmm. done X, Y, and Z, so I know I can trust them? Or do you like watch somebody and then you're like, they make me feel like the character I want them to make people feel, and that's how you go from it?
Right.
I know that's like 20 questions right. in one, but I'm going to go.
No, that's good. The last, I guess the last fiction, you know, non-documentary project, the last few scripted projects that I've worked on, and the one that I'm currently, we're about to go into production on right now, we've been mostly just, we have not been doing much casting. It's been a lot of making offers to actors that we already either have a relationship with or know their work. Like, recently just got to work with Michael McKean and Alan Tudyk. Michael McKean is, you know, a legendary improv actor from Spinal Tap and Best in Show and Better Call Saul. And Alan Tudyk is, you've seen him in a million movies, mostly known for voice acting and, you know, Frozen and Wreck-It Ralph, but, you know,
he's Firefly. Been in
Dodgeball. Yeah, of course, Firefly.
Yeah, but, that's yeah, his
Dodgeball,
thing.
You know.
Star Wars.
Star Wars, yep. but, you know, we were basing it off of we hired a casting director who has, you know, relationships with a lot of people, and she would send us a list of actors that, you know, she thought fit kind of in that world of what we were going for. And then we just started making there are certain actors that no longer have to audition, and then there are certain actors that have to audition sometimes, but then we'll get, you know, straight up offers every now and then. I'm sure Michael McKean and Alan Tudyk get plenty of offers, but I know they still probably have to audition every now and then for things. But yeah, that's how we've been doing it a lot lately, because we're trying to go for slightly more established actors, who may not come in for an audition. But then there's always, you know, for any given project, there's usually 5 to 10 roles that you do have to kind of do a wide search for, you know, casting, whether that's because, you know, there's not enough money to pay a bigger actor, or it's, you know, a smaller role. So yeah, that's kind of how we've been doing it lately.
Interesting. Does the fact that that's the way you're doing it mean that the kind of movies that you're working on are, like, I'm not going to say of a higher level. I mean, that's kind of what I mean, but not to say that any movies are better or worse than another, but like, if you are talking to a casting agent and like asking them, hey, can this well-established actor work with me? That means that you're pretty high up there, right? People want to work with you. That means that, you know, or what does it mean, I guess?
Yeah, it's a gradual, we're kind of, the way I see it is, we're gradually moving towards, you know, having, hopefully every project you do should build upon a reputation of being talented, being professional, treating actors well, and then hopefully, obviously, putting together a good movie. And so I think with our first feature that we did in Austin, Intramural, I think we kind of were able to get some bigger actors, some people from SNL. And I think that kind of, I don't think that movie like made our reputation, but I think it really helped cement it in a good starting position, to where, you know, more or less from that movie on, we've been able to at least get considerations from a lot of people. I feel like at this point, you know, if there's a budget, and there's a director attached, and the script is pretty good, we can get considerations from, I would say, you know, 90 to 95% of most actors. Now, I don't think we could get, you know, we probably couldn't get reads or considerations from bigger actors like Chris Pratt or Meryl Streep. But, sure. You know, I think there are definitely people, we're at that, the people, myself and the people that I work with, I think we're at a level where we can get most actors to at least consider. Now, whether or not they'll do it is, you know, up to them. So,
yeah. But yeah. That's super interesting. Yeah. Just now, you've said we a few times. Who do you mean by we?
Yeah, I mean, I've in the last kind of 6 to 7 years, I've worked with, I have a company with Russell Groves, David Ward, and Andrew Lee. We used to all be based out of Austin. Currently, myself and Russell are in Los Angeles, and Dave and Andrew are working out of Austin, but we kind of started a full service production company where we're focusing on making longer things. So we'll make commercials, but we're mostly focused on trying to make narrative documentaries and narrative features. In doing that, we've partnered with other filmmakers as well. So that was, we partnered with the director Luke Corum to make Delk. And then we partnered with Andrew Disney to kind of work on Crunch Time for Rooster Teeth and Intramural. And we're currently in pre-production with Andrew Disney on another project right now that starts shooting next week. So.
Oh, right on. Cool. I wasn't sure if maybe that you were still working with that team that I met you with or if you were doing other stuff. I knew that you were in Los Angeles, but I wasn't sure because you just said we a couple times and I was like, maybe it's like a writing partner or something else like that. Are you mostly doing writing stuff or producing or kind of half and half?
It's mostly, I would say it's mostly writing. Because I'm not really a great producer a producer in the true sense of the word where like I'm making budgets, I'm, putting together, cast, call sheets and all that stuff.
From what I understand, there's lots of different jobs a producer can be doing.
Yeah. So like I'm usually only producing on things that I've had a hand in the creative on.
Yeah.
But mostly, yeah, I'm mostly writing these days, which is nice. Yeah.
Don't sell yourself short as a bad producer. I'm sure you're great. And everybody has a different thing. I mean, I was thinking about it myself. I was talking to somebody about like, hey, what else could I do? Maybe I could be that producer just walks in and goes, hey guys, everyone's going to be all right. Don't worry about it. It's going to be great. And then that's what I am. That's my job. I just hug everyone and bring cookies. That seems like a good job. I could probably do that.
That's a very important job because the most, I feel like the producers who are the ones who kind of like get things done producers, like they're much more like everything's on fire and we're all going to die. Cause they see the problems from 1,000, but you need those people because they're the ones that are actually preventing everything from catching fire and everyone from dying.
That's why you need a whole team, right? Yeah.
Exactly.
Not just you and your friend in your backyard still. You've upgraded to a team.
Right.
So really, there's a lot of hands on deck.
Right.
Oh, exactly. Man. Exactly. So bring me back to you were talking about your first UT film or the first one that you felt super strongly about. Tell me about that program and how it connected you with the team you work with now.
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah, I sometimes people ask me if they feel like film school is a good use of your time. And I think it just depends on who you are as a person. I don't think film school is necessary. It's not like law school where you absolutely have to do it in order to do what you do for a living. Spielberg didn't go to film school. Paul Thomas Anderson didn't go to film school. And they're two of the greatest filmmakers alive. Mm-hmm. I think film school is very important for me because I didn't understand what it meant to really make a movie until I like was surrounded by like 25 other nerds just like me who were aiming to do that, you know, for grade, more or less, you know, for diploma. And in, you know, in starting to make these films, I started meeting some people that I still work with. Like I met Andrew Lee, who, is in the next room producing our most recent project. I met him in film school. We like to joke that I wanted him as my producer and he wanted me as his director, but we never worked with each other until after we graduated. He kept getting paired with other filmmakers, and I secretly always wanted him to be my producer. But definitely, you know, UT Film School, like I feel like, and our cinematographer that is currently in the other room about to shoot this new project for us, like he was a good friend of mine from UT Film School. And I think film school, if you treat it really seriously, can be an invaluable tool for anybody trying to make it.
You know, I know the UT RTF program is really great, but I guess I've never heard anyone refer to it as film school. When you go in that program, is it like liberal artsy? Like, do you have to take other classes or are you just immersed?
I think the deeper you get into it, the more immersive it gets. Probably my junior year where it was like every class was either a production class or a screenwriting class. The first 2 years were like, there was a little bit of like screenwriting, a little bit of smaller production, but there was a lot of like, get that English credit out of the way, get that physics credit out of the way. Or you had to take like, you know, intro to Asian cinema or like intro to African cinema or, you know, something that isn't production focused. Mm-hmm. That's more theoretical, I guess. But in film, I love those classes. I thought those were really fun classes.
Sure. But, helped you be extra nerdy too.
Oh yeah. That's definitely. I essentially had gone through high school where I was the only film nerd at my high school. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, my friends, we liked movies. They liked movies, but nobody was. You know, trying to go see all the art house hits like I was. So
I don't think there's that many, to be honest. I mean, I know that like there's a lot of theater kids in every school and there's probably a couple of, you know, solid schools that are just like Glee or something like that. But realistically, there's about one or two of us in every real school and the rest of the people that are doing it are just along for the ride to do some sort of extracurricular. I think of all my high school friends that I did theater with and like maybe two of us out of 50 actually do theater now, like do this kind of stuff. Everybody else is, you know, get regular jobs or, you know, they work in different things or, you know, whatever other parts of their careers are. It's funny to hear you talk about your friends where it's like, yeah, they just wanted to help. I totally understand.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, everybody wants to be involved in a movie. I mean, who doesn't want to act? I think everybody secretly thinks that they can act. I think everybody secretly thinks that they're funny or know what's funny. And so, you know,
I never had a problem.
Right. I never had a problem recruiting my high school buddies to be in my movies. But yeah.
So when you get to college, you're meeting all the people, you're connecting with everybody. Mm-hmm. You connected with Andrew Lee after you graduated and decided to work together. Mm-hmm. How did the connection happen? You guys had always talked, you know, hoped maybe in the inside, but how did it finally come together?
Yeah, I mean, he was one of those responsible people that was able to get a job like right away in the actual film industry. He was producing commercials. Actually my first actual writing job, I was hired by, one of my professors. There's a great professor in Austin named Scott Rice, and he was a film and screenwriting professor. And, he and I just really hit it off. And, he was directing these commercials and he wanted somebody to help him like do more of the creative, like writing on these. And so he paid me $500 to write like 8 or 9 commercials for him, and it was like the greatest day of my life getting that job. but yeah, as far as Andrew goes, he was already working, making commercials, producing, and I thought that was really cool because I wasn't working in film at the time right when I graduated, and so, you know, I just kept emailing him asking if he wanted to like read new scripts that I was working on, and finally, like, he and another couple of friends of mine, we started making short films together, and that's kind of how we got launched on this current trajectory that we're on. So
nice. When did you officially become a business? Like, when did the four of you guys officially become a business together?
I think it was 2010. We had submitted, we entered into this contest called the, that is no longer around, unfortunately. And once I describe you what this contest is, you might understand why it's no longer around. But it was a short film contest where the grand prize was $100,000. And not only that, but if you made it into the second round, they gave you $40,000 to produce a short. So essentially the way the project worked was anybody could submit, and you had to submit an original short film, 7 minutes or less. And we submitted I wrote and directed a short called I Love You, Will Smith. And it was essentially like about a guy who says he doesn't like Will Smith at work one day. And then everybody at work freaks out. And it's like, how can you not like Will Smith? And this was back in 2009 when Will Smith was still the hottest actor on the planet. So
I don't know. I bet it seems very relevant.
Right. And you know, we worked with two really awesome Austin comedians, Mike McRae and John Ramsey. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we submitted this film to this contest, and it ended up getting placed in the top 20 of this contest. And so when you get in the top 20, they more or less say, like, all right, you 20 filmmakers, write another script for a short, and it needs to be like 30 pages or less, and we're going to pick four, we're going to give you $40,000 to go make that movie, and those four will then compete with each other for a grand prize of $100,000. It doesn't exactly sound like the most sustainable business model, but
yeah, I mean, where's awesome that money coming from?
It came from a hedge fund guy. So I don't know why he was doing it, but all I know is we got to make a $40,000 short film, that I think ended up pretty great. And we ended up winning the whole contest. And that was kind of the birth of our business.
Whoa. So wait, you won $100,000?
Yes. Split three ways.
Oh my God.
So split That's three ways crazy. Is just enough to survive for a year.
Yeah, but, one no, person maybe. Yeah, but right, wow. Exactly. So that's a heck of a kickoff for a business, yeah. For sure.
Yeah, it was good. It was really good because we had been working, you know, the four of us. It was me and Dave Ward and Russell and Andrew Lee. And we had been kind of working on and off together for about 2 years up to that point. And so when we won a contest, it was kind of like, all right, we all work well together. We have a little bit of money here. Let's try and make this work. And, so far it's worked relatively well. like any small business, it has its ups and downs, its good years and bad years. But, we're still doing it, I guess, now 7 years later. So that's good. It's a good time.
Yeah. Eight, if it was 2010. Wow. Interesting. You know, there's mm-hmm. so many contests mm-hmm. out there. You don't think people win them. I mean, surely someone has to, but you really just don't. It's, right. You're literally the totally. First person I've ever heard win one of these things. Like, I know hundreds of people who put in scripts and movies and all sorts of stuff, mm-hmm. but I've never heard of anyone winning. That is so interesting. I mean, clearly when people talk about about certain things. They talk about that being the way they got their foot in the door. What a wonderful boon to the business to get started that way and help it out and also make you realize how budgets work. Yeah, that's interesting. Wow, fascinating.
Well, and it's funny. Yeah, I had, up to that point, I had probably entered collectively or just on my own into like 40 other contests or you know, whatever you call them, and had won none of them.
Yeah.
So, and yeah, once we won that one, we were kind of like, we're never entering any of these things again. Like, it's just, it takes a lot out of you. And
sure.
It's a,
plus, I don't think there's another contest that has that kind of winning. So really, you won the most. Why try for others? What are they going to give you? $5,000? You'd be like, thanks.
Yeah, I already got that $100,000.
No. Yeah, no big deal. We're amazing. That's wow.
Yeah.
So interesting.
Yeah.
So since you guys have, how many years has it been? Maybe about 2 years or so since you've been in Los Angeles, or is it more than that?
Yeah, I'd say it's been about three. But
3 years, right?
Two and a half to 2.5 to 3. Yeah.
And you guys are half in Austin and half in Los Angeles. How does that bode for the business? How does that work? I mean, I know we're thankfully in the world of, you know, cell phones and Skype and all the things. So realistically, you guys can all be in the same room every day. But how does that work for you guys, developing new projects and coming up with ideas and just doing business talks together?
Yeah, I mean, well, what's interesting is, and this kind of makes sense when you think about it, but this, we still, up until this upcoming Monday, we will have not shot anything in LA. Everything we've shot has been in Texas. The first thing we will ever have shot in LA as a company, we start shooting on Monday. So
interesting.
Like, it's been a lot of, like, I think it makes sense because, you know, we'd spent, you know, 10, 12 years in Texas building a network, building, you know, connections and friends and infrastructure. And so, pretty much everything that, you know, the last feature we just did, the one with Michael McKean and Alan Tudyk, was we shot it in Houston. Crunch Time, you know, the TV series we did with Rooster Teeth, we shot it in Austin. Delp, the documentary, we shot it mostly in Austin and in San Antonio. It's hard to kind of get things up and running in LA just because everyone's doing it out here. And it's also just more expensive. Like, we're putting together this project that we start on Monday, and every location in LA is double what it is in Austin. It's just, no matter what it is, it's going to be double. But the upside is you can get some really great actors for a day. Because they just, all they have to do is hop in their car and drive 25 minutes and they're on set.
Trying to get
an actor to pop out for a day in a day cameo or a 2 day role in Austin is much more difficult.
Sure.
So just pay them a lot more money usually.
I was totally going to ask about locations and stuff because, I figured California, Los Angeles for sure, would be more expensive. But, man, the cost benefit to being able to have to say to somebody, just get in your car, drive, you know, no big deal. You'll be right in the same town. That's got to help. Yeah. Interesting. Because I was going to say, I had heard people in L.A. who were filming stuff are going to, like, you know, Nevada or, you know, New Mexico. And that's where a lot of the locations are. A lot of people that I know acting and stuff, that's where they're going.
Yeah, everybody shoots. I think, so Russell, one of the producers that's in our company, he independently produced his own movie last year. And the cinematographer for the movie, is a guy named John Schwartzman. And John Schwartzman has shot, he shot The Rock, he shot Armageddon, he shot Pearl Harbor, he shot 50 Shades of Grey, he shot like big, big movies. And he's been doing it for 30 years. And so they shot this movie in LA last year, really small, low budget movie. And he said that this is the first movie that he's shot in LA in 25 years. And that's why he took the job, was because he was just like, I like the script. I want to work on this. And I get to shoot something in my hometown. And that's crazy. Like, wow. Everybody's shooting in Atlanta these days because that's where the acting firms are. So, yeah.
Huh. Interesting. Wow. Mm-hmm. But you guys were like, we're sticking to LA. It gives us more options in the way that we want. That's so, like, that's an excellent, like, you know, if you know what you're going to get is better than if you were to try to go somewhere else. Absolutely. That's super awesome. And what a fun lesson to have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that, like, you know, Russ, Andrew Lee and Dave Ward are sticking around in Austin. I mean, they have a family. They both have kids. And I think it's just Russell and I are both, you know, not married, no kids. And so I think it is a little bit easier to kind of, you know, LA is an expensive city, not easy to live out here. It's not as expensive as a place like New York. But it's definitely not as, a little bit tougher to kind of crack it out here, I would say.
Do you think it's a good thing that you have both the cities, that you still have the roots in Texas so that you can film here whenever you need to? Or are most of the people, like, cinematographers and camera guys and all the crew that you know, have they moved to LA as well?
I think we're seeing a lot of – I'm seeing a lot of Austin people wanting to leave Austin. I think it's because the tax incentives left about a year or two ago. And so it's just harder to get shows out here. Mm-hmm. I love nothing would make me happier than to shoot movies in Austin for the rest of my life. I'd love to not shoot them in the summertime, but that's unfortunately when we seem to shoot everything is in the summertime.
Yeah. But it's always films. Weird.
Yeah, exactly. It's a snowy Christmas movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think having roots in Texas, I think, is great, because I think people do want to shoot in Austin. Like, whenever we've shot something in Austin and we've talked to, you know, actors or cinematographers and we're like, hey, you get to come down to Austin and shoot. Everyone seems to be pretty excited about that. So.
Yeah, it still holds a cachet, even if the people in town are kind of done with it and the tax incentives have gone away. The people that aren't here all the time are like, ooh, fancy. Yeah. Taco trucks. Yeah. I'll go.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Everyone I talk to thinks it's magical, too. So it's great. I lean right into it. Oh, yeah. It's magical. Yeah. Unicorns on the street for sure.
Of course.
So the most recent thing previous to the current project you're working on at the moment that I've seen of yours was Dealt, the documentary. Mm-hmm. For you is the experience of creating, because you were a writer on a documentary, what does that mean? And does that mean that you crafted the story in editing, or that you were the person asking the questions? How do you develop a documentary? And it was so, I just want you to know, I loved the movie. It was so well put together to the point where, like, as I'm asking questions to the screen, you guys move on to the thing that I'm like asking about. Like, I'm like, what about this? Oh, and then that's the next thing. And my husband's like, shh, just watch the movie. And I'm like, okay. But what about this? And then you guys do it again. And he's like, seriously, just watch the movie. I'm like, okay, no, I'm in it. But, you know, I was so involved. And sometimes I talk. That's cool. So how does that work?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. I had worked with, the director of that movie, Luke. He and I had done another movie beforehand where our roles were pretty similar. You know, I guess writing a documentary, when you hear the term writing for a documentary, it can be confusing because you're not actually opening up, you know, screenplay software and typing fade in and typing the guy walks into the room. But for Dealt, it was a story that I uncovered. It was a friend of mine was telling me about, this guy in San Antonio who was a great magician. And he was telling me all these kind of stories about this magician. And I think he forgot to mention that he was blind. And he was telling me, you know, a couple tricks that he could do. And I was relatively intrigued because whenever I hear about magic, I'm like, oh, interesting. A magician. That's interesting. And then after he was kind of done telling me about this magician, he was like, oh, I forgot to tell you, he's blind. And I was like, what? And I kind of didn't believe it. I thought it was maybe one of those like urban legends of like, you know, that people talk about, or maybe he wasn't really blind, or maybe he just had like one bad eye or something. But I looked him up, and I, sure enough, it was true that this guy was, you know, in San Antonio, and he's the greatest, you know, one of the greatest card magicians and mechanics in the world. And he's completely blind. And so me and I took the project to Luke, because I know Luke's a really great director, and Luke also happens to have a background in magic. His dad was a professional magician for 25 years, and Luke has a lot of magic performing experience. And so we were able to kind of get together with Richard, the subject of the movie, and I think we impressed him with just kind of some of our ideas and our passion. And from a writing point of view, like Luke and I, we essentially would write, we wrote like three different outlines of what we thought the movie would be, you know, even before we started filming. And then we started, we essentially made a big interview. We call it casting, which is not the traditional term of casting, but casting for a documentary is kind of like, okay, who's going to be, we know who our main subject is. It's the guy who is the magician. So who else, who are we going to surround him with in this movie? And, you know, obviously we want to interview his wife, his kid, his mom, his sister. And then we were like, okay, who are the other magicians that he knows? So we made a big master list of people to target for interviews. And then Luke and I would write all the questions together, and then he would conduct the interviews, but I would kind of sit behind him, and just make sure he was on track or follow up on a question that I thought could have gotten a maybe a more dynamic answer. Yeah. And then we would edit together as well. So it's very much a, all-encompassing process, more or less.
Yeah. So did you just few weeks with him and then like end up putting together all the footage, or did you go back and try to add? You spent 4 years with him.
Yeah. Well, I mean, not all the time. But I mean, yeah, documentaries take a long time. I mean, we started the day we wrapped production on Intramural, we had our first fundraising meeting for Delt. So we started production on Delt in November of 2013. We went on our first production trip. And then the movie didn't come out until October 2017. So it took, you know, a full four and a half years for it to get released. Put together and released. So it's a long, long process full of lots of angst and hair pulling. And I think we had 9 different cuts of the movie at one point. It's just a lot of trial and error. That's documentary filmmaking. It's just lots of trial and error.
Well, you have a commitment to the process, and you have a commitment to the stories you want to tell, and that is admirable for sure. I mean, just the sheer fact that when you finished one, you were immediately starting with the next. I mean, that's some like, you know, true life. I mean, like it totally reaffirms the idea that this is what you're meant to do. You know, when it's so like, I can't even wait a minute before I do this next thing. So amazing that you're so deeply in it.
It's kind of somebody, I forget who it was. There's a really great improviser that he was actually in Intramural. His name's DC Pearson. And he's just a really talented improviser and actor and writer. I remember I was listening to an interview with him for something, because he's done a lot. He's written books, he's written scripts, he's, you know, he does podcasts and he does improv and all that stuff. And he more or less said, like, to the job of a, you know, modern day creative person is to be a professional juggler. But you have to be able to juggle 4 different projects at one time. Like, there's no way to, unless you like have an inheritance or the first thing that you come out with just hits it so big that, you know, your career is perfectly laid out in front of you. You just have to be able to juggle four or five different things at one time.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, you know, when you're in production on a movie, that's all you can do is that. But if you're, you know, I'm usually trying to write, you know, two different scripts at one time. We've got a documentary that, while I'm trying to write two different scripts at the same time, I've got a, hopefully there's some sort of a documentary project that's either being edited or we're, you know, trying to get it sold. And then, maybe there's a commercial that we're trying to bid on, and you just kind of have to like have your fingers in all these different pots and be able to multitask in that way.
Yeah, man, there's so many more questions I have for you because like, I'm so interested in all the different parts, but we've been talking for a while. So I'm just going to give you one final question because I know you're busy and you're working on your thing and you're so great. So please, based on, and maybe part of what DC said will play into this, but like, what advice would you have for a person who wants to be doing what you're doing? How do you, what do they need to do to be the best juggler they could be in the world right now? Do you think?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's, you know, there's a couple of different ways to answer this. I think it's obviously identify specifically what it is you want to do, because like for me, I knew that I wanted to be a writer. And I do want to direct, but I don't, directing is not my end all be all. And directing is just like it's much more difficult to make a living just as a director. Mm-hmm. And so I think like, and I knew I wasn't good at editing. Not that I wasn't good, just that I didn't like it and I wasn't organized. And being an editor is, you have to be very organized. So like I cut that out of my, I used to be able to edit and I knew that wasn't going to be a career path for me. So I just stopped doing it. I was just like, I'm not going to do this anymore because I don't want to be known as an editor because I'm not good at it. I think it's just identifying specifically what it is you want to do. So if you want to be, an actor, don't become an editor. If you want to be a screenwriter, don't become a cinematographer on accident. I know people that are not doing what they want to do because they got into, they thought that, you know, by becoming an editor, they would eventually become a director. And so, so many times it's not how it's going to happen.
Especially not if you're good at that thing.
Right. Exactly. So then I would say, find the things that you're bad at and then find people that are good at those things and become intrinsically linked with them for life. So I think the only thing that I'm pretty good at is writing. I'm not really good at much else. The people that I work with, Dave's a good writer. But he's really good at a couple other things. Andrew and Russell are dedicated to producing. They're not interested in writing. And so I think just having a team of people that are good in areas that you're bad at is kind of where I, tell people what to do. And also just live cheaply. Like there's no reason if you're young, there's no reason to like live beyond your means. I feel like I know plenty of people who are like, they're 22 or 23 and they're like, I got to make a lot of money this year. And I'm like, no, you don't. You don't really have to make, you don't need to make $90,000 when you're 22 years old. Like if that's what you want to do, if you want to make $90,000 right when you graduate from college, like go be an investment banker, like go to law school.
It's funny. I just read a thing about how if you're looking to make money, the last thing you want to do is focus on the idea of making money. It was like, if you'd like to make money, you need to do good work and stop worrying right. about where the money comes from. So even if your friend wanted right. to make $90,000 as an investment banker, they have to become a pretty good investment banker.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
I think live cheaply would be good, is a good bit of advice for every person. It's like, you don't need that yeah. stuff. You're okay. Be the best novelist yeah. or be the best librarian or be the best investment banker, but like, save your money if you're earning it and doing good stuff. Like, go ahead.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah. I always, though, I think I had a metaphor that I used to use. I haven't used it in a while, but it's like, I usually take a job based on like the chair model, which is like, if, maybe it's called the chair model, but it's like, if it's like, if like two out of the four elements of these, man, I'm doing a very bad job explaining this, but it's essentially like, I look at every job based on like three or four different criteria. One, does it pay? Two, is it something I'm super passionate about from a story point of view or whatnot? Three, is it with somebody that I either really like or really admire? And four, is it going to actually be fun when we're doing it? And I feel like if two out of the four of those are there, I'm usually in. And don't get me wrong, there have been times where like it's been a shitty project, but it pays a lot. And I've been like, all right, I guess I should do this. like I had no qualms about taking jobs for paychecks for the most part. For the most part.
Well, you gotta sometimes. They yeah, need exactly. you but, as much as you need them.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, like, there's definitely been times where I'm like, I'm not gonna make a dollar off of this, but I think it's gonna be a lot of fun. And the person that I'm gonna get to work with, I really admire, and so I'm gonna do this. So that's my criteria of four that I usually base it off of.
That's pretty good. That's pretty solid right yeah. there. I like that. Yeah. That's awesome. You've always been inspiring to me. Every time I've seen you work on a project, you're always very professional. And like I said, there's so many other questions about like the little details of this, that, or the other thing. But you know, I'm going to say that for another time because I know All right. that you're working hard and I want you to be working hard because when you work hard, I get great movies to watch. So, Absolutely. Thank you for Absolutely. Taking the time out of your night to chat with me and to share with my audience, you know, what it's like to live a life in film, and good luck with everything going on.
Absolutely. Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to Yes But Why Podcast.